Ajallu, un programa producido por Enrico Manalu y Mario Portugal. En Ajallu, conversamos con artistas musicales de la escena independiente, explorando nuevos universos sonoros. Transmisión simultánea en Twitter, Facebook, YouTube y por flaxoradio.es, donde además podrás descargar este y los otros podcasts de Ajallu. Flaxo Radio, amplificando ideas.
Welcome to Ajallu Radio, courtesy of Flaxo Radio in Quito, Ecuador. We're your hosts, Rico and Mario. Ajallu Radio is a show about the experiences of musicians around the world, their music, and what it's been like to be musicians during the pandemic. Every episode will feature one musical act, and we'll be talking to them about what it's been like to make music during one of the hardest times in recent memory.
As you know, musicians, not the music industry, have been hit especially hard as music venues around the world were shut as part of the efforts to stop the spread of the virus. Finding good and no music was hard enough before COVID. So with Ajallu Radio, we are trying to bring you the best new music we can find that emerged from the pandemic. Who do you have for us today, Rico?
I've actually got a little bit of electronica for everyone, brought to us by a duo out of San Francisco called Balti, who I talked to just the other day.
I didn't know that you actually like electronic music. I believe that you were a rock fan as me. What brought your attention to this group?
Yeah, that's right. But I actually heard about Balti through my partner, who's actually close friends with Jaivir Singh, who's one half of Balti. And we got to see them live not that long ago. What I like about them is that it's not like anything I've heard before, and I really appreciate it when I hear something new. So I've never heard old Indian records sampled to make beats like that, which the guys told me more about in our interview. Here's a little taste.
Oh, that's great. I would love to hear more of their music and what you talked about in the interview. Once again, this is Ajallu Radio, courtesy of Flaxo Radio Ecuador. Stay tuned for more Balti.
Hey, everybody, it's your host, Rico Manalo, for Ajallu Radio, online and on Flaxo Radio out of Quito, Ecuador, here with Balti. That's Mihir Chohan and Jaivir Singh, a San Francisco-based duo making sample-heavy house music that finesses retro, nostalgia-laden South Asian samples and intricate layers of percussion, giving their tunes a swampy, crunchy, lo-fi feel. Recently, they've returned to San Francisco after starting off 2022 touring India, where they're originally from. We'll get to that in a bit. Balti's self-titled EP is available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Bandcamp, among others. Follow them on IG at balti.mp3. That's B-A-A-L-T-I at mp3 on Instagram, where you can also find their link tree if you want to check out what else they've done. How you doing, guys?
Pretty good. Happy to be here.
Yeah, glad to be here. We're doing well.
Fantastic. So let's talk names for a second. Can you introduce yourselves to the audience quickly, and who are you, and who does what?
Yeah, I'm Mihir. I'm one half of Balti. I grew up in Bombay. I didn't know Jaivir till pretty recently, but in terms of like what I do, I think we kind of split what we do pretty evenly, and there's no like specific roles. But I'm half of Balti, and give it over to Jaivir.
I'm Jaivir. And unlike Mihir, I've known him for 7 years now. So we went to college together. We were like on the same floor in freshman year, and then we kind of just like stayed friends and stuff like that. And we actually had like a band together in college, like way before, like at least before I was doing electronic music. Like Mihir was still like very much making beats and stuff. But yeah, that was like our first like kind of loose collaboration. Then we started Balti like much later.
Yeah, I guess like before Balti, if we were to have band roles, I think we were both drummers. But then Jaivir was like, there can only be one drummer. So then he decided to play guitar. Yeah.
So kind of a Highlander situation. There can only be one, right?
Yes.
Nice. So I'm given to understand that Balti actually means bucket. Is that correct?
Yep. That is correct. Yeah.
So what's behind the name?
I think we just like how it sounds. That's it.
Yeah. There's no like deeper meaning. But it's funny because a lot of people who ask us that like already have some ideas of like the metaphors it could mean in their head, and we're like, no, we just like how it sounds.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great name, and you know, I'm kind of wondering now that you told me that you guys had something of a band before, if any of that earlier stuff, those deeper cuts, are going to make it into your Balti experience eventually.
Oh no, I doubt that. That's like very different, very like jam bandy stuff.
Yeah, like upstate New York, trying to be the Grateful Dead, like that kind of vibe. I mean, we do have a lot of like old recordings of that, so it could be interesting if we went in to see if there were any like things we could pull from there. But
I'm scared to even listen back to that.
Yeah. Some of it could be pretty epic. Some of it could be pretty cringe. So.
I get you. It's always kind of dangerous to look at the past, but if I'm hearing what you're saying, that earlier band was trying to be somebody else, and it sounds like with Balti, you're maybe both trying to be yourselves, or I don't know what's behind the project.
It is like a pretty unique sound. I think like it's like that. That also makes it hard sometimes because it's like we don't have like as many like references to draw from. Because it's like, oh, like there's not like too many other people doing it like exactly the way we're trying to do it. But yeah, of course, like we have like massive inspiration and like look up to a lot of people who've like done really cool stuff before us.
Yeah, but I think while we were making our first record, it was pretty like cut off from a lot of other things. It was like, you know, curtains closed. We weren't even listening to a ton of music. We just had like a few things that we were listening to then referring to. But I think, yeah, like part of making it in isolation like that gave it its like own voice in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And like we didn't like really show it to anyone before it was like almost just like done fully as a project. Like the first time we like played it for our friends, we played an entire like 6-track long project, like a 30-minute long, like fully realized like thing for our friends, and that was the first time like we played it to anyone else at all.
Wow. So that must have been, I would be nervous, you know, but that's just what I'm like, because you know, it's one thing to play one song, but to play a whole EP, and then I'm imagining that you're like waiting for the reaction, but like maybe trying not to look to see, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And yeah, it's like we'd like gotten into our own world pretty much by that point. So it was like it was like super interesting, like show that to someone finally.
Yeah. So, you know, if Balti had an origin story, right? So you're telling me about the early days a little bit, but like, what was the impetus? What was the spark? What was the thing that got the two of you to say, you know what, we might both be drummers, but we've got something here, and I want that thing to be Balti.
Yeah, I think we shared a lot of like perspectives on music, but if we were to boil it down to one event, it's like kind of funny story. We were at this festival called Desert Days in it was like outside of Los Angeles, and it was a lot of just like psychedelic rock. So we were still kind of in that phase of like, that's the kind of music that we shared, you know, like really jammy, like rock kind of music. And they had this section in the festival that was like it was called a Mystic Bazaar or something. And they had all these little, you know, like pop-up shops, and they're selling all these little trinkets. And then there was this one tent that had like programming all morning for like different events that would go down before music would start in the afternoon. And there was one thing that we saw in there that it just sounded really funny. It was called like yoga trance dance. and we were just like, what is this? And then when we walked by it, it was this like deep house music happening, and like a lot of white people pulling really funky moves in this tent. And the whole like spectacle of it was pretty humorous.
Yeah. I think like that was like an in joke with the thing for a while, because like it was like, yo, like when like people outside of like our culture like look at music, is this really the first thing, the most catchy thing that they hear about it? And you know, the most cheesy stuff is what they were kind of sampling and playing around with. So like that kind of sparked the idea that okay, there's like way more interesting stuff happening in like Indian music than like what like catches the Western ear, like at least in this context. So that kind of like set us about like digging around in like old Indian samples and like trying to present different sides of it that I think you would normally think work with electronic music.
Nice. So it sounds like what you're saying is you heard some cheesy shit and then you were kind of saying we can do way better than that. And but I'm not hearing that this was motivated out of spite, more out of like a knowledge and a deeper understanding of music that you felt was being misrepresented. Is that fair to say?
That's the nicest way, yeah.
Yeah, I think you
did pretty well. Yeah, no, it was definitely not out of spite. Like, it's all love.
I mean, yoga trance dance is still just like an endearing joke that we make today.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, like, it was really interesting to hear that, you know, you were both into psychedelic rock, and that got me thinking, like, how do these two guys go from psychedelic rock to house music and electronica? But I'm so glad to hear that it's because of something that made you both laugh. I can't think of a better way to start something up, honestly.
Yeah. And like, honestly, we'd like, even though we do like electronic music now, like a lot of that early, like being in a band influence is stuck around. Like the way we like structure our tracks, we think of like verses and choruses and hooks and bridges. And it's a very band-ish way of thinking about songs, like a songwriter way of thinking about them almost. So yeah, it's interesting because like a lot of people who like listen to our music like and have like become fans, and surprisingly a lot of them are not even like that into electronic music. They just like the songs for songs. So it's like, it's nice, we kind of straddle that line between like a band and fully electronic. And I think people even assume that we'd be playing acoustic instruments when we're on stage and stuff like that. So that's pretty cool to me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I have seen these guys play live before. There are no acoustic instruments, but they are absolutely electric in person. So if you have the chance, I definitely suggest that you go see both of them as soon as possible. It is really interesting to hear that, you know, how you're kind of approaching things, you know. I think a lot of people have this perception that because electronic music is so different, perhaps the process of putting a song together is not the same as, say, a rock musician, singer songwriter, as you were saying, or even like a hip hop track. But you know, music, I think once you understand how it all fits together, then you can kind of create it any which way you want. So that's very cool to hear that you've got this kind of band approach. If we're kind of thinking about creative process and also say music that's really influenced you, which you guys have already touched on already, you know, well, who would you say has had the most influence on you musically? And how does that kind of play into how you approach creating a song?
Yeah, I think we could name a few people right now who influence us a lot and have kind of been there from the beginning. But I think it also, like, something really relevant was kind of where our influences were when the project started. So I think I was into a lot of like instrumental hip hop, and how that was affecting my process was thinking about, you know, how can we chop up samples and then reinterpret them to like different kinds of beats. And I was very much in that like slicing and dicing zone. And then I think, Javir, you were into more like ambient electro music. And
yeah, I was just trying to do sound design stuff, you know, just like make really cool sounding things, not even like tracks exactly, but I was just trying to do like sound design and ambient stuff.
Yeah, so I think it was like two very different approaches to just like manipulating audio.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that set an interesting foundation for like how we started making music together early on. But yeah, if I were to name a few people back then, it was probably like, you know, classic like Dilla. Just like the way that a lot of instrumental hip hop artists, like the lo-fi beats to chill / study to was definitely like a phase. You know, how people would just mess with old jazz records and completely recontextualize them was cool.
Yeah, I was listening to like a lot of John Hopkins and Brian Eno and all these like ambient legends, and a little bit of like techno as well. But yeah.
As Balti started happening, I think, you know, our like holy grail of influences would be, you know, Fortet, Caribou, Floating Points,
Romare, yeah, all those folks. And like it changes a lot. Like now, I don't think we don't listen to those people as much anymore. It's like more like garage and jungle and like UK bass and stuff like that. That's like really inspiring right now. So
what do you find is drawing you to that UK slice of music?
Just literally like having spent a lot more time in clubs and like big dark rooms where like you're just dancing, like those songs just hit so different in those kind of settings. So yeah, our new music is way more club oriented. I think it's just informed by having played in all these venues, like, and you know, spending more time in them.
Yeah, like we made this whole record during the pandemic, but like who knows what our music would sound like if we were going to clubs the whole time.
So, I mean, if we can touch on that for a moment, have you kind of noticed as the pandemic has gone on that, you know, you've kind of thought about things slightly differently? Or I don't know, for a lot of creative people and, you know, a lot of people who are outside of the creative fields, they don't always understand how things can be used as inspiration, or how people kind of leverage something that happens into a creative moment, you know?
Yeah, I think early on in the pandemic, we were really experimenting with how we thought people could collaborate and make music. Like a lot of our first EP was made purely over Zoom.
Really?
Yeah. Like it was all, we had like, I think 10 or 12 songs down just over Zoom. And then by the end of it, I was like, okay, like Mihir's, one of his roommates moved out or something and he had a free room in his apartment in SF. And I was like, yeah, I'll just come down and let's just like finish the EP. But like when we like finally met after the meat of the pandemic, we'd already gotten like 10 songs down on Zoom.
Yeah. Zoom was so interesting. There were like, it forced us into so many different frameworks of thinking that I think somehow really worked well. Like, for example, like one of us would be screen sharing and audio sharing, like, you know, our DAW, like Logic or Ableton or whatever. And that was super cool because we noticed really quickly that, you know, one of us could be like just purely in execution mode and like not have to, you know, could just like make any changes really quickly. And then the other person on the other end could like not have to think about any of that cognitive load of like, how do I actually make this happen in the DAW, and could just, you know, call creative shots really freely. And like splitting those two processes up made like, I don't know, we churned out ideas so quickly.
Yeah. and also I think like Zoom, the audio quality of a Zoom could be like pretty shit.
Yes.
That's a good thing in some ways, because we weren't obsessing over, you know, like tweaking sounds to live a perfect. We were kind of just like getting ideas down, and like if an idea didn't work, you could like tell instantly, right, rather than being like, oh, maybe it doesn't work because like this sound needs to be tweaked a bit. But it was more like focusing on like the more abstract, like, you know, do these chords work, do these, like, does this melody line work, does this hook work at all? So it was kind of like taking a step back from the more zoomed in view that you tend to have when you're in the same room.
Yeah. Notes are accomplished.
The limitations kind of forced you to look at the structures of things. Is that right?
Yep.
Like the meat of it, the heart of it.
That's cool. I mean, you know, you hear so many stories of musicians and often their producers trying these like really far out things to get exactly the sound that they want. You know, like I remember years ago, somebody told me a story about one of the Pixies albums, and I'm forgetting which one at the moment, but there's a song on there where, you know, the vocals are so gripping, and the way that they achieved the sound was by sticking the lead singer in a filing cabinet, essentially, and having him scream at the top of his lungs or something like that. And so I'm always fascinated to hear kind of like what people are working with, what the limitations are, and how that impacts the end result. So I'm glad to hear that Zoom played a role in the Balti EP, as it did in so many of our lives and continues to do so on a daily basis. But yeah, and I never would have thought that Zoom would be part of the Balti story.
Shout out Zoom. Anyone at Zoom is listening, yo.
Sponsor me.
Yo, upgrade our session, man. All right. So speaking of the EP, that is the Balti EP. Tell us a little bit more about that. We've touched on it. You talked to us a little bit about the process, how you started working, how you were like working really thick and really fast, and you know, you couldn't focus on the prettiness of it. But you know, I actually don't know how many times I've listened to that EP at this point. You know, like I think Mihir, you mentioned Lo-Fi, the YouTube channel. I don't know if we're allowed to say the name for copyright reasons or whatever. But yeah, I could definitely see your music fitting into that playlist for sure. But it's, when it comes down to it, it's just a very listenable album. And for context, I don't really consider myself to be a big fan of electronic music. So I definitely think that some of your approach has come through that to me. And yeah, I'd just like to know more about what it took to get that album together. And how did you land on those? Is it four tracks? I think it's four tracks.
I mean, firstly, yeah, thanks. That's like, we appreciate the hell of that. Like, especially like from someone who like doesn't come from like a background of electronic music listening. Cause like, yeah, that means like the songs are just like, yeah, they spoke to you or whatever. So that's cool. I guess when we started, yeah, when we like, when I got to SF, we had like a bunch of songs. We just threw them all into iTunes and spent like 2 hours listening to all of them all the way through. And then picked out like this one, this one, this one, this one. And we had 6 that we really liked. And then we polished those. And we kind of had this like cohesive sounding demo tape that we started sending out to people. But finally, what we ended up releasing was like a little different. Like, we didn't end up putting out those 6 songs, mostly for like sample like copyright reasons and this and that. And actually, one of the songs that was supposed to be on the EP, we had to pull last minute because the freaking label asked us for like way too much money. And I'm like, yo, do you even know, like, this is an independent record? We're not putting this in a Bollywood movie or anything. What's wrong with you?
It's only like $6 figure.
Yeah.
$6 figure for like these deep cuts that have not been heavily featured. I'm guessing. Is that right?
This one particular song was like kind of big. So anyways, we learned our lesson to like kind of chop the samples up a bit more, maybe. I don't know how to say that. But yeah, we it went through like a couple of phases from like the original idea to what it ended up being. But overall, I think it sounds like better for it. It has more of an identity for sure.
I'm absolutely shocked that you kind of, as you said, put it into iTunes, said this one and this one, because to me the tracks just flow so seamlessly into one another. And I mean, yeah, talk about cohesive. Like,
we did a lot of stuff in the end to like make it super cohesive, like between songs and stuff. Like, you know, we'd like connect them either melodically or just work out the pacing of the entire EP so it like felt more like one journey. So yeah, just like little tricks, I guess.
Yeah, also we were like learning to mix as we did this, so I think whatever we learned and landed on, isn't probably, you know, like world class, like standard mixing techniques. So that kind of just drenched everything in this like similar sounding, like cohesive sonic identity, I guess, because we were just like figuring it out as we went and applied whatever we learned in that short amount of time to all of these songs.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you just use one guitar for an entire album, that album's going to sound pretty cohesive. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you've got a point. But I guess the counterpoint I would raise is not only have you put on successful shows in San Francisco, you also did a tour of India, right? So something's working for you guys.
We have come like a long way from like when we first made that music. So I think we've like learned a lot and like become more proficient at it.
So, you know, before we started recording, both of you were telling me that there are some things in the works for Balti. And so I'm curious, what are you carrying forward from the EP into the new work?
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before, and like I think we've had like 3 or 4 versions of this conversation where like, shit, what do we do for this next EP? I think the meat of what EP one is what we want to carry forward. And by meat, I think it's still kind of song centric. Like we really like songs with hooks.
Songs that are catchy, not just like indecipherable or like undiscernible like stuff that just sounds like everything else, which is cool, but like songs with identities are fun.
Not just a song to like fit a certain vibe or like, you know, jump on the train of like a trend in genre that's happening at the time.
Gotcha. I mean, Javier, I definitely see what you're saying. And again, it's so interesting to me that the two of you are listening to like jam band music, which has the same problem that prog rock has, which for me has the same problem for a lot of electronic music that I've heard and not enjoyed, which is that lack of identity, Mihir, that you're talking about, right? So it's like this long, sprawling, in some cases, epic thing. But at the end of it, or even in the middle of it, I'm like, I don't know where I am. I don't know what you want me to do. Like, do you want me to slam dance right now? What do you want me to do? You know?
Yeah. I mean, but I think because we also listen to like just a lot of like pop music. So we like, we kind of like really value like things that are concise and well arranged and stuff like that. Like, you know, like, yeah, like Charlie XCX or what, like whatever, like just like contemporary music, like, I feel like pop's great. Yeah, pop, like they really get the songwriting down really well.
Yep.
So it sounds like for you, at least, Javier, a lot of music craft is very important. Is that fair?
I care about songwriting. I mean, about arranging especially, because it's fun and it's definitely. Can be used very well.
I think that's like what gives songs a lot of identity, like how, like the pace at which you introduce different ideas and like how long you hang out on them and how that like ebbs and flows through energy. And I think we really like pop arrangements in that, like, you know, they're kind of to the point, they flow really well, they explore a lot of ideas, and then that's it, you're in and out, and like you got a lot out of it. And so yeah, that craft of arrangement is something that we like paid a lot of attention to and that we fight a lot about and results in like really good shit in the end.
Nice. Well, I can't wait to see what the new album is like, and you know, maybe if we're lucky, you'll get to share some of that music with us on a Hayu Radio. If we're kind of pivoting back to the pandemic in general, you know, so what has the pandemic meant for the two of you as a band?
I mean, to begin with, like it gave us this space to actually make music together, which we wouldn't have considered earlier because we weren't living in the same city. So we were just like, oh, that just doesn't make sense. But I guess just doing everything virtually gave us the space to like do that even. And yeah, you know, like being able to take things at a slower pace, like gave us more time for music even, you know, not having to go into the office and stuff like that. It's like, okay, I'm at home anyways all day. Like I can, like, you know, if I have more time on my hands, I can invest it on music. So.
Yeah, I think we're also, we also just generally like disagree with the state of boredom, and when we had all this extra time now, like we just like poured it into music.
Yeah, nice.
You know, I remember in that earlier phase of the pandemic, people kept saying stuff like, if you don't come out of this with a new skill or like blah blah blah, then you're wasting your time. And I don't know, I always kind of took issue with that a little bit, because know, not everybody has a set of skills where they can lean into a project on a whim and just make something out of it. But for people that can, then yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of really great projects come out of the pandemic so far, which is, of course, the impetus for the show. So if we're talking more specifically about, you know, motivation, would you say that the pandemic has kind of influenced your music or creative process? You've touched on this a little bit, right? So talking about Zoom and things like that, but this is more of a comparative. Like if you're thinking before how you were making music before the pandemic, is that very different or is this the same or how's that hanging for you guys?
I think like pre-pandemic, I was still trying to get bands together, like still trying to like get people in the same room and, you know, be like, oh, let's jam and stuff like that. But like, I think now I'm way more of the mindset that like, I like working on a laptop now a lot. Like it just, I love that. It's just so direct and I can be anywhere in the world and just like bust out a song, you know. I can be in bed and write a song. It's just, yeah. Like even when we like not here, like, you know, even when we like, when we were on tour and stuff, we could just like write things while we were there. So like, I think coming out of the pandemic, like our like skills for just doing stuff like ad hoc are like way better.
Yeah, I would say it's similar for me. In my ideal world, I would have like gotten bands together and stuff, but like I just didn't know how to do that being in San Francisco and like I wasn't really meeting any musicians. We didn't have a space or anything, so I was like, okay, cool. The only other option is like to make music alone on my laptop. But then as soon as the pandemic started, it's like, no, like anyone can do anything from anywhere. Like you don't have to be in the same place. So that opened up this like, okay, like wait, we can collaborate musically, like from being in different cities and do it like do laptop music and not band music. And it just like made a lot of these ideas that were like hard to, or that had a lot of like resistance to them. It was like, oh, only the Gorillaz do this. Like no one else has done it. And they're like a one-off. Yeah. It's like, it kind of shattered a lot of those like walls, I guess.
Yeah. And also like it for me at least, like, it made me realize that like I don't need a bunch of gear to like do stuff, you know, because like earlier I was like more fixed about, oh, I should like build up a studio and like get all these like often expensive things to make music with. But it's like, you can just do all that with like a cracked version of Ableton and just like it's more about like how you interact with the tools than like what tools you have, to be honest. So like, yeah, literally right now, like the only like essential piece of gear I think I have is like my speakers, because I like how they sound. But yeah, everything else I can just do on my laptop now. Whereas when I was back in New York or Seattle, I was like more obsessed with, oh, let's get this machine or whatever to make this sound.
Yeah, so I definitely hear you both. I mean, for me, in some ways, the pandemic, it seems like it reminded people, not that the internet existed, but that the internet is really useful. You can use it for a lot of things. It's not just for porn or Twitter or picking fights or whatever. Like you can actually do some stuff that could change your life, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
Nice. So, right. So this started as a pandemic project. And you also released your EP during the pandemic, which is still ongoing, of course. And you were walking me through a little bit about, you know, that first playthrough for your friends. What was it like to release an album online, not kind of knowing where people were at? Well, I guess that's an assumption, right? But for a long time, because I was mostly on my computer in my shitty little apartment in Boston. Now I live in Oakland, but just kind of in my own head, you know, and I didn't really have a lot of awareness of what other people were going through other than like the news or they were mad at Trump or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think like by the time we actually released it, like on all the platforms and stuff, we had gotten like a good amount of feedback from a bunch of different places. But when you ask about, like, you know, that when we played it through for our friends and we had the six tracks, I feel like that was a super cathartic moment, because we were the only people that heard this. And then it was also in like coming out of like a really strict shelter in place. It was also like, oh my God, I get to see my friends after a little bit of time. So the overall vibe of that night was super like celebratory. And it was just like, hey, we just want to share this thing that we did. And we didn't have any like expectations from it. We didn't know that we wanted to release it at all. We were just like, if anything, like, we got to commemorate this thing that we made, and like, let's just call some friends over and show it to them.
Yeah. But I think we were lucky that, like, at least in San Francisco, by the time we like put it out, like officially, a lot of things had started opening up.
Yep.
So I think like a couple of months after we released the EP, we were like playing shows in SF. So that was really fun. Like, you know, like the public work show, that felt like a proper like celebration of the music. And like that felt like the unofficial release party.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was the, so Javier is referencing a show that they played at Public Works, which is a venue in San Francisco where I actually saw them play live. And that was the first concert that I'd been to since the pandemic started. And it was sensory overload. I mean, it's a club for one thing, but like, I hadn't been outside and around that many people for a long time, and to have that all at once, and then to see the two of you on stage, it was a lot to take in. But what I can say is that house was moving, asses were shaking, people were having
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed that.
So tell me a little bit about your tour to India. You know, that's a hell of a way to start off 2022. And, you know, here in the US, we hear a little bit of what's happening in India. We've heard, you know, it's not so good. In fact, sometimes it's been really bad, but, you know, it sounds like you were able to put together a whole tour, and well, you're back here safe and sound. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we got really lucky with the timing.
So lucky.
Because, yeah, like, restrictions were, like, fully lifted, and, like, cases were really low, and everyone was feeling safe and good and going out a lot, like, in, like, November and December and stuff. And, like, we did all of our shows, and literally, like, 2 weeks after that, like, Omicron hit, and, like, everything went back into lockdown.
Yep.
So I think we just, the timing worked out really well. That's, yeah.
Nice. So, you know, just out of curiosity, where did you play and what was your favorite show?
Oh, yeah. So we played a bunch of different cities. So we started off in Goa. Then we went to Indore. Then we did Bombay twice in two different locations. And we did Bangalore. And
we did Delhi in the middle. Course, yeah.
Nice. Favorite one, damn. It's like a huge toss-up, but like I would say for me, it's like either Goa or Bombay.
Yeah, same. Like, Bombay was really fun because we were like closing the night out, so you could just play for whatever, like however long, and then DJ after that even. And it's just like a really fun, packed, energetic room. And Goa was sick because it was like the first show of the tour, and like we had like zero expectations for like, you know, if people are going to show up or even like the music, and like it turned out to be a super fun night. So that was, and it was, yeah, first day of the year, so that was super special.
And nice. And that was also when we were like meeting all of these people who we've only interacted with online for the first time, like our label folks, and like you know,
the label being Crunk Records, is that correct?
Yeah.
Crunk Culture.
Crunk Culture, excuse me. So you know, here in the US, I think there's not a lot of people who have heard sounds like the ones that you two are sampling in your music. And it's something like really new and really fresh, even if to you, there's parts of it that are not. So I'm kind of curious, what was the reception of the sound that you two have built in your home country?
I was really, yeah, I think we were like very pleasantly surprised, but we didn't know what to expect at all, because it was like, will people find this too nostalgic, or maybe cheesy, or, you know, like, did we do it justice, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I think everyone just like ended up vibing to it. So yeah, the reaction was pretty good, I'd say. And it's cool because like some, yeah, because it was like just nostalgic enough to like hit people in the feels the right way, well, like while still being pretty fresh.
Yeah.
Nice. So before we wrap up here, I guess, I don't know, you have any projects that you'd like to talk about? You mentioned that there's an EP in works, but is there a date on that? Or I don't know.
There is an EP in the works. There's no date on it yet. There is a show that we have coming up in New York on March 5th. At Avant Gardner, we're opening for a bunch of different artists, and it's like a live only festival for one night. We're super psyched about that, and we're hoping to test out some of the ideas off our this EP that we're building at this venue.
Very cool. So that's coming up pretty soon. So I guess I'll have to get back in touch with the two of you to see how that all went. And before we go, what's your message to music fans as we continue to deal with COVID?
I don't know. Do you have anything?
Don't put too much pressure on yourself.
Yeah, just have fun with it. Don't like that thing you talked about earlier, you know, like feeling like you have to walk out of COVID with a new skill set or whatever. Like, I don't think that's true. As long as you're just like enjoying yourself, having fun, and staying like kind of curious, trying new things.
Yeah. Also, if you're stuck making music on your own, try to find a collaborator.
Yeah. And don't feel down on yourself if you're stuck. Like, it happens to everyone. Like, yeah. I think we spend like weeks making stuff that like doesn't inspire us as much. And then, like, then we stumble upon something that we really dig. So it's like, I think it's very normal to, you know, get into ruts and then climb out of them.
Yep.
Nice. And that is your dose of perspective from Balti. All right. So once again, this is Balti. That's Mihir Chauhan and Javier Singh. You can find them once again at balti.mp3 on Instagram. That's B-A-A-L-T-I at mp3 on Instagram. And you can also find their link tree with some of the other less cool interviews that they've done and, you know, a bunch of their other things as well. Thanks so much for coming on the show, guys.
Yeah, Rico, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So we've got a little bit of music for you now. First track that we're going to play by Balti is called Ame. Guys, if you could introduce that for us a little bit.
Yeah, this is the album opener for our EP. It has a Gujarati funk folk sample on it. And yeah, we just really like how groovy that sample is and how soulful the vocals are on it.
Yeah, like the idea behind this was just like an exposition to the world. So it's like, it's kind of just like one long build up. Just kind of like, it kind of feels like you're entering a new place. At least I like to think of it that way.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. So once again, this is Ame from Balti. we're going into our next song now from Balti called Ustad. And tell us a little bit about this one, guys.
So this one, I believe, was sitting on Mihir's laptop as a loop for like a few years before like we got to it. I don't know. When did you originally have the idea for it?
I think it was like 2016 or something. And it was one of the first songs that we kind of revisited from like my old drive of ideas together. And within like a day, we had transformed this like rusty, like dusty old flip into this track.
Yeah. This was really fun because it was kind of like our first time like fully doing a song together. So we kind of threw all of our like different ideas into it at once. It was like, oh, the drop should have this and we should have these kind of hats and like we should like chop the vocals like this. So like we kind of like let all of our inspirations loose into that track.
Nice. So it sounds like this one's been percolating for a while. Here for your listening pleasure, Ustad by Balti.
I'm playing tabla. I still hadn't noticed that I was doing that. I was just having fun.
ये भी पखावज का है और ये ये बड़ी ये भी चक्करदार है मतलब.
And then I would do it.
Thank you.
Guys, we're going into our final track. This one is called Kolkata 78. And can you tell our audience a little bit about this one too?
Yeah, this is probably like the track that like really got us excited about the idea of Balti. We found this old album by Rupa Biswas, and it was just like, it's called Disco Jazz, and it's so funky. And we can say this because we cleared the sample. we sampled off of that, and then I sent it over to Javier, and we just both thought that the marriage of these two worlds, like dance music and this like old Bengali funk record, just sounded really good, and it felt really special off the bat, and we just went from there.
Yeah, that was like the first idea that like he showed me, that I was like, yo, we should like make a full track out of this. That one's, and it's still like probably one of our favorite songs to play live.
Yep.
Nice. The way you guys are talking about the samples that you're using is making me want to dig for records with you guys.
Yeah.
All right, so here again is Kolkata 78 by Balti. Once again, everybody, Balti's self-titled EP is available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Bandcamp, among others. Follow them on IG at balti.mp3. That's B-A-A-L-T-I at mp3 on Instagram.
Thanks for listening. That's our show. We'll be back again in 2 weeks with a group from Ecuador, Cementerio de Elefantes. As you know, you can catch us on Flaxo Radio's webpage, but also on its social media, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube.
For info on Haiyuu Radio, or if you've got comments, questions, or great bands that you'd love for us to have on air, drop us a line at ahayuradio@gmail.com. That's ajayu.radio@gmail.com. Once again, we're Rico Manalo
and Mario Portugal. Thank you and see you next time.
Flaxo Radio, amplificando ideas.